Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris, equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks for joining us. Once again, Ward Hannigan is with us. Ward is an active investor, landlord, developer, and educator, and he's been responsible for training many of the very successful foreclosure trustee sale buyers in California. Ward, again, thank you for coming or joining us.
Sure.
There's a new problem that's come about. There was a case in Ohio where a lender tried to foreclose on 13 houses, and the bankruptcy judge basically denied them because they couldn't prove that they had ownership of the loan. And recently in San Diego, the same thing happened. So just your take on that. Is that anything that's going to seriously stand in the way of a lender pursuing the property?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that you know, all they're doing is talking about the fact that MERS, which is mortgage electronic registration system, is a proxy holder of title to property, and on behalf of the actual lender. And so, but since MERS is named as the trustee, you know, why isn't MERS doing a foreclosure rather than somebody else? And I think they'll that'll be cleared up pretty quickly.
Okay. There's a bill in Congress that would give the bankruptcy judge the right to do a cram down, forcing the lender to, in essence, accept a short sale while still keeping the loan in place. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that the mortgage industry is a pretty powerful, adversary. I don't think that that's going to become widespread. I think you'll see some sporadic cram downs here and there, especially if it's really, just an outrageous interest rates and foreclosure, I mean, fees and all this stuff that have been added to the loan. But I just don't see it as something that's going to be, prevalent for the duration or a solution. It's something that somebody could grab onto and hope it's going to help them save their home.
If that did become a policy, to where the lenders felt that was a threat, do you see that would have an impact on how they would determine what type of loan they would make in the future?
Sure, become even more. You're going to see lenders like the old pendulum. You know, they got away with murder, and now they're contrite and they apologize, and they want to go back, and they're going to prove now that they are incredibly conservative, and so it's going to swing very hard the other way.
Correct.
Believe me, I'm telling you, and that's why, if you're smart, you prepare yourself for that event. I think that I'm so happy that I've had experience in the 70s with buying and selling property without having involved new loans. But anyways, I think, do nothing but make it much more of people getting around having to pay off loans and just be keeping the current ones and carrying back loans to trust deeds to those current balances.
One of the things that I looked up during that 81 to 84 time period where we had those very high interest rates was about 60-65% of all transactions in those years involved the moving forward of inexpensive interest rates that were in the 70s or carry back or combination of all of the above. Almost 65% of all the transactions that took place in those years involved other than financing that was new.
Right.
And that's pretty much a lost art.
Yeah, it's a lost art. That's why for the last 4 or 5 months I've been telling people at different talks I give that, hey, go in your own area, talk to title companies, get them to give you the all-inclusive deed of trust, promissory note. Make sure you get one that doesn't say 19 down at the date line, you know. Mm-hmm. At least have the thing say 20. And but I think you're going to probably get into an area where there's going to be, land contracts, there's going to be all-inclusives, there's just going to be just ordinary taking subject to and carrying back a junior deed of trust for your unpaid purchase price and stuff like that.
How hard is it to sell a house in San Diego right now?
I think it's pretty hard. It just depends on, what type of house.
Exactly.
Is it are you in the right the kind of property that people are going to buy no matter what the market is, and those are properties that people perceive they need. So that'd be a entry level.
When you go into the market as an investor with experience, you're really thinking about that prior to a purchase. So you could get, you have the opportunity maybe to get a great deal on the wrong inventory, and with experience, you'd probably pass on that purchase. Is that correct?
Absolutely. For example, I wouldn't buy a $2 million house in La Jolla that's going to sale right now at 1.2. There's a great house, great area, at a great discount, but it's lacking one third thing, and that is, you know, can I sell it very quickly? The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
I have a white elephant around my neck.
Would condos fit into that category in San Diego?
They don't fit in that area anywhere I've been speaking. You know, I don't know if you noticed, but when I talked for your group up in Ontario, and I asked a question, you had 303 people there, and I said, how many people here, if money was not a consideration, would rather live in a condo or a townhouse instead of a regular house? Please put your hands up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that out of 303 people, I think it was three, maybe possibly four out of that group that held hands up. And I asked the audience to turn on and look.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a business of buying and selling and buying and selling, don't you want to buy and sell what the majority of the people want to buy rather than what the minority want? In this instance, it was what, 1% of the people in that audience preferred to buy condos and townhouses?
Yeah, that's a good indication. You better not own that property in 2008.
Yeah.
Sizing up 08, what do you expect the California real estate market to be like? Do you think it'll be harder than 07?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be. In fact, I think it's really going to, all of a sudden, people are going to really understand, oh, my God, this thing is really a disaster. Yeah.
Yeah, this is for real. This is the soft landing.
Yeah, that
didn't happen.
Exactly.
Okay. You deal with a lot of past students. I'm sure you've been warning people to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Did they listen, or are they suffering for being aggressive for too long?
Yeah, well, it becomes, you know, the prognosticators like you and I and on, if we don't get it exactly right, you know, within a week, you know, then they say, oh, come on, you know. So now they'll go off and buy something. But, and I've had a lot of phone calls, and I'm sure you have, with people that, you know, and some you care about that, I say, you know, gee, Ward, I didn't listen to you, and I, you know, now I own, three spec properties, and I'm bleeding on them. And should I continue feeding them, or should I let them go?
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, I've had really some of the heart-wrenching calls. I mean, where people were really losing money they thought was permanently theirs.
Yeah,
those are hard phone calls. They really are.
They are,
especially, you know, when you. I think. Isn't it true that the first time you go around, it's easier to make that mistake because you just haven't experienced real estate hurting you yet?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there's some mistakes, I swear there's some mistakes that we humans have to make regardless of what mom and dad tell us or anybody else, you know, that stove's hot. Well, you know, I think nowadays I probably turn around and say, okay, kid, touch the stove. Come on, touch it. Bam. Ooh, wow. Okay. Now, don't do that again, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about feeling the pain that's really important.
Yeah.
Well, there were a lot of people that with a lot of experience that said this cycle was different, that it wasn't going to end, and then they gave us a list of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So were they, I don't know, were they being, I'm going to give them credit for being sincere. Why did they think this was going to be different than the last time?
Because they wanted to.
They just wanted to be.
They desperately wanted it to be different because if it was, if their dream turned into reality, man, that was their answer for, you know, retiring or their answer for making some major changes in life. They want it so bad, pretty soon, you know, they're going to act on that dream instead of reality.
What do you think, percentage-wise, the price it has been in for San Diego up to this point?
How much it's declined?
Yeah.
I think it's probably between somewhere on a county-wide basis, between 7-8% from 06 to 07.
That's really a lot less than I would have thought you were going to say.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty reasonable. We're really falling properties very carefully in, let's say, Moreno Valley,
mm-hmm.
30%.
So, sure.
Corona, 30%.
Yeah. I think you're going to have hot spots where some areas are going to be price resistant, some are going to be price, you know, debacle leaders, and If you average it out over the county, of course, it's going to smooth out some of those. But I think that also Riverside, and I went to school in Riverside, and on and on, but it's been many years since I've been intimately involved like I am with San Diego. And I think just my own personal feeling about Riverside, prices went way up, even much more especially the entry-level houses went way, way up to almost stratospheric numbers, and so they're going to consequently come down. But one thing I think about Riverside is that it's going to come down, but it's going to come down quick and hard.
Yeah.
And then I think it's going to be resilient, and actually it's going to come back, in the next cycle when the properties are up, and it's going to be, I'm quite interested maybe in buying something when Riverside when it's down.
I'll let you know when we have some one-bedrooms available.
Yeah. Shoot them my way.
I'm always asked, and you almost touched on it, when the thing is going to bottom out and go the other way. Do you have a timetable in your head?
Yeah, I think most of these economic, over long term, these economic cycles run about a 3-year to 4-year trough. They go up and they go on down and they come back to the upside. And so we've had we've really been off kilter from, from 90 to 96, 97, it was down. It was a very, very exaggerated down market. Then, of course, we had a consequential, incredibly exaggerated up market from 2000 to now, almost, 2000 to 2006 to maybe early part 2007. And so I think now these oscillations are not going to be so wide. They're going to narrow back down to our typical 3 to 4 year type of oscillation. And so I expect this one to probably last at least, really not really crawling out of it until around 2010, something like that.
Okay. Let's talk about holding title. There's a lot of discussion about how to do that, and I know that you have a favorite way. And one of the topics I want to make sure we cover is the idea of getting a lender to loan on a property that you just bought, fixed, and resold. They're being very touchy about flipping. So I want to talk a little bit about how to maybe hide what we paid for properties, that type of thing.
Okay.
All right. So taking title of property, what's the problem with me just taking the property in my own name?
Well, the property then is it's very public. And that's in a nutshell. It's because the recorder's office were... sales are the history of sales and are kept on the face of a grant deed is that's where they're all recorded. Now you can. There is a very legal process. It's a Revenue Taxation Code section in California. It's been around a long, long time, long before I even got into real estate, which allows you to request a recorder not to show the transfer stamps on the which are related to what you pay for property on the face of the grant deed. That you can request that they not be shown on the film. So when people look at the deed, they just see nothing there.
Is that done via a request to the title company?
Well, it's a request that you actually make of the recorder. Of course, you want to do it if the title company is going to be recording your documents. The request and the disclosure has to be on a separate but non-recorded sheet that's paperclip to your deed.
Okay.
Yeah, they can do it with every deed. I tried it once and got away with it with a trustee's deed, but I think that's the one exception to having it done, and the only reason I think I got away with it was the recorder's clerk was green.
Okay. Is there anything at your website that talks about that?
Yeah, at length. Go to the website, the archived articles, and I think it's October of 05.
Okay.
But look there's a column on the left-hand side on our website, go down to archive articles, click on that, and and as you go down through it, you'll see the request for non-disclosure.
Okay. Does that help when you're trying to resell a property as far as a lender getting...
Well, the lender's not going to see what you paid for it.
They are going to see the transfer, though.
They're going to see the transfer. Well, see, I don't know which sale you're talking about. In other words, when you bought it,
yeah,
then you turn around and selling it.
Right. It's hard to get a lender to want to fund that purchase if they're viewing it. Naturally, they're being suspicious, especially right now, as this might be one of those illegal flips where we're just bumping up the price and getting a straw buyer or something.
Well, here's where I escaped a little bit. If I buy my properties at a trustee sale,
yes,
they see a trustee's deed. They know that that's not a flip that I got from somebody.
Correct, that you're in the business of
right.
this. Okay.
And then another thing that helps me is that typically from when I buy a foreclosure to when I sell it, even in the best of markets, let's say seller's market, I'm probably not under a lender's gaze for about 6 months when I'm reselling it, and that buyer now is going to his lender in about 6 months.
Okay.
So I think they have a time suspense, too. And if you get 6 months or older, I think it's not as difficult.
Yeah, FHA will do it in 90, but you're right. The other lenders will be at least 6 months. Okay.
Well, let's say that you're buying a property, and it's not foreclosure, and you got it at a great deal, and so you can afford to flip it. You got maybe a buyer already waiting. Then that's the time to, on the deed, not show the transfer tax. So they're not going to be able to divine that. And also make sure, people forget this, you have to, in your offer counter offers, make sure that the agent who represents the other side agrees in your counter offer to not disclose the sales price to MLS.
Okay.
So you can disclose the fact it sold, but not the sales price.
Okay.
And I make that a condition upon my offer and counter offer going back and forth. And I've been doing that since 1972.
So I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, well, sure, you can insist that the agent not show the price. That's why, famous people buy properties, you don't know how much they paid for it, and MLS shows that it sold but doesn't or was bought, but they don't show for how much.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the land trust. Is that your favorite way of taking title?
The favorite way of me taking title, for a number of reasons, but land trust are now... Chicago Title has, maybe in the last 15 years or so, started referring it to as a title holding trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more clear what it does.
Well, what is that document made up of? How many people, how many players are there involved, and what is the cost of getting that document? Is it repetitive, the same type of document?
Well, there's three types. Let's say you agree with the basic premise that, taking title in my name, all right, is crazy because it leaves me very publicly exposed to the amount of wealth I've accumulated. And guys like you and I, once we learn out a successful system, now another thing you have to learn is a system of keeping it.
Right.
So we learn how to earn it, now we got to learn how to keep it. And so there's three entities. The state of California says that you can hold property in, and the state of California won't require you to register or record with them that entity.
Okay.
Okay, so one is natural person. Okay, number two is a trust, and number three is a general partnership. So those three entities are recognized by the state of California, but the recognition doesn't cost us anything. Or if they want to recognize a corporation, it costs you every year, an LLC, it costs you every year, and a limited partnership, it costs you every year, and yada, yada.
Okay.
But I like to think of staying out of the records of the state of California, too, for that extra measure of privacy. So if I don't have to record something, and I don't have to... down to the recorder's office, and I don't have to file something with the state, legally don't have to do that, wow, I've really have closed the circle of privacy pretty good.
Okay. Now, let's say I'm buying a property, and it's directly from another person.
Mm-hmm.
What is typically the entity, just give me a typical name of an entity that would be buying the property?
Well, I would put it in a trust, title-holding trust, my favorite one, and I would and I would take it. The trust is titled, you first have to name the trustee. So I use, and I would suggest that you probably do the same thing, use the trustee that doesn't repeat your name. As you don't want to take it in Bruce Norris, trustee of the Elgin Trust because it's on Elgin Street, because now people will see Bruce Norris as the trustee and assume that if you're the trustee, you must always be the owner because that's the way living trusts work.
Okay.
So you want to take it in a legal but fictitious entity. So I would take it, or somebody else's name, have Ward Hannigan be your straw trustee. The trouble with that is then you'd have to trust the character, okay?
Right.
And you know where that'll get you. So what's probably simpler is to have a, I like using an LLC. So I use Financial Fitness LLC as trustee of the Elgin Trust dated, let's say, the day I buy the property. And nowhere do you see the name Bruce Norris.
When
someone's searching for something against you down at the recorder's office, they're going to look under your name. That property sure isn't going to come up.
When you buy subject to an existing loan, is it this is typically how you would take title?
If I buy subject, yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, I would, one of the things you want to do is subject to is you got two things going. Number one, you want privacy of ownership. Number two, you don't want to alert the lender.
Correct.
Because you're taking subject to an existing loan. So in that instance, what you'd want to do is take advantage of the calling your trust after the seller's name. So let's say Bruce Norris is selling Ward Hannigan something. I would have Bruce transfer before I bought it into a trust. So it would go from Bruce Norris to Bruce Norris, trustee of the Norris Trust, dated such and such. Wow. Everybody thinks that's a living trust, even your lender.
Mm-hmm.
If your lender happened to find out that, in fact, what we do is we actually send a lender a copy of that transfer deed saying, hi, I just want to let you know I've taken a property out of my name and put it into my Norris Trust with me as the trustee, see a closed copy of the recorded transfer deed. Now, that's one of the exceptions in the Garn-St. Germain Act of 1982, the federal law, that reinvigorated the due-on-sale clause, which was knocked out in California 4 years before in 1978. You know, with Mrs. Wallenkamp versus the Bank of America, Fred Crane's case here in California.
Right.
So, but there's some exceptions. There's nine exceptions in that 1982 Garn-Germain Act as far as barring lenders from exercising the due-on-sale. And exception number eight, if you look at it, is a transfer from a borrower to what they call the inter vivos trust. Well, an inter vivos trust is a fancy way for saying a revocable trust. Okay?
Okay.
And so a land trust and a living trust are both revocable. Okay?
Okay.
So when someone sees the trust is in the Norris trust and I own it, now how do I get it? Well, once Bruce puts it in the trust, then I'll buy the trust from Bruce after it's already. He's already recorded the name change down at the recorder's office.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get Bruce to then deed the trusteeship from himself. So it goes Bruce Norris, trustee of the Norris Trust, to Financial Fitness LLC as successor trustee of the Norris Trust.
Okay, now a successor trustee doesn't necessarily own what's inside, but
no.
You now can at least dictate who in fact does have beneficial interest. Is that right?
Well, the beneficial interest also, there's a non-recorded. You don't record anything that's personal property down to the recorder's office.
Correct.
So the beneficial interest in the trust is personal property.
Okay.
So we have a non-recorded but notarized transfer of the beneficial interest from Bruce Norris to, in this instance, our example, Ward Hannigan.
How do title companies feel about that transfer?
Well, most of them don't care. Basically, if I went on to insure that transaction,
right,
the title company, I'm probably not going to do it.
Okay.
Because title companies are not accustomed to insuring the transfer of personal property. And what I'm buying from Bruce is the beneficial interest in his trust, like buying stock in a company. If I bought Home Depot stock, that's personal property, and title companies aren't going to insure that sale.
When you want to sell that property that you're holding in a land trust, is it really typical that you're going to sell it to them and they're going to have a grant deed out of the trust?
And I used to be just a flaming evangelist for the trust, you know, when I first found out how fantastic it was. And I tried to convince people I was reselling property to hey, leave it in the trust.
No one in their circle even understands what it is.
Right. So, you know, I finally just have to sell it out of the trust. So whoever my trustee is, so the trustee signs a deed selling the property out of the trust into the buyer's name personally. And because that's now the sale of real property on my sale out, it's now I can give that buyer title insurance and I can give that buyer, you know, the benefits of escrow and all that.
Ward, we've run out of time. I'm going to mention your website again, foreclosureforum.com.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken Ward's trust training myself and I sent my son Greg to take the foreclosure training, so obviously
right.
I recommend it. So, Ward, thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome, Bruce.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week here on News Talk 590 KTIE.